All right, let's talk about some just general respiratory tract infections. Rhinitis, what is it? Nose infection. Yes, your nose in Latin is a rhino. I don't know if that's a statement about your appearance or not. What's the most common cause of rhinitis? The common cold. What's the second most common cause of rhinitis? Allergies. They can be chronic or it can be acute or intermittent. Sinusitis, infection of the sinuses. On physical exam, patients will typically have pain when you tap or when you push on their sinuses. Ow, that hurts. Pharyngitis of the throat. A lot of times, pharyngitis is interchangeable with tonsillitis, although technically they're not quite the same. But when you hear acute pharyngitis, a lot of times what they really mean is of the tonsils themselves, but could be the throat itself as well. The most common for here, again, colds, but also strep is a big one. Staph can cause it. Mono causes symptoms that look almost exactly like strep. Some of you asked the other day, what would cause enlarged lymph nodes? Infections like pharyngitis can cause it, but mono will cause it all over the body, not just in the throat. And thrush is another one you have to consider, which is infection with candidiasis, yeast infection of the mouth. Laryngitis is farther down in the throat. It's what causes a person you can't talk. Usually it's viral. Bronchitis of the bronchi. Bronchitises, most of them are viral, but can become bacterial over time. So it starts out, the person gets a viral bronchitis, and they start producing excess mucus, and then bacteria come along and colonize that. Flu is a common cause of bronchitis as well. And then we have pneumonia, which is an infection of the lung itself. So let's talk about pneumonia. Pneumonia is the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. What famous person do you know died of pneumonia just walking around? All right, let's play a game. I'll whistle a tune and you tell me what it is. You should know this one, Tara. Maybe Amanda. You should know this one. Yes, The Muppet Show, Jim Henson. Jim Henson died of pneumonia. He just thought he had a cold. He really had pneumonia, ended up dying. Factors for pneumonia include age. Who's most at risk for pneumonia? Elderly and the young children. So as you get older and you leave childhood behind, you start to become more immune to things. But then as you get older, you shrink back into being susceptible again. People who are immunocompromised. Who is at risk for immunocompromised? Patients with AIDS or HIV. Who else? Say again? Okay, surgery. What kind of surgery? Transplant surgery. So transplant patients. So because we're giving them immunosuppressive drugs. And one last group of people. Okay, there's actually two. But cancer patients. Cancer itself and also the treatments for cancer both suppress the immune system. And there's one last group of people who've had their spleen removed. So when we say immunocompromised people, the people most at risk for immunocompromise, HIV, cancer, transplant patients, and splenectomy patients. All right, patients who already have lung diseases. A person who has asthma or COPD is much more likely to get pneumonia than someone who doesn't have a lung disease. Alcoholism. Alcoholics are more likely to get pneumonia. Part of the reason for that is that alcohol inhibits neurological function. When you inhibit neurological function, you're more likely to What's that A word we talked about yesterday? Aspirate. Smoking. Patients who smoke are more likely to get pneumonia. Patients who are intubated, because they've got a tube stuck down their throat and they're not breathing normally, they're not coughing normally, they're more likely to get pneumonia. Malnutrition. Patients who don't have adequate nutrition can't mount an adequate immune response, more likely to get pneumonia. Patients who are immobilized, because they don't breathe as much, more likely to get pneumonia. So patients who have just come back from surgery are very high risk for pneumonia, and as a result, we are going to get them in sinuspirometer, we're going to get them up and walking, and we're going to encourage them to turn, cough, and deep breathe. Causative organisms. Bacteria are by far the most common ones that we're going to treat, but you'll also see fungus, protozoa, and parasites. Much more difficult to treat these three. Much more difficult to treat these three are. Yeah, my wife talks like Yoda too. She'll like drive by a gas station. $3.96, cheap that gas is. All right, now source. If a person gets pneumonia just walking around, bopping around the ordinary life, we call that CAP, or community-acquired pneumonia. If they get it in the hospital or other healthcare setting, we call it nosocomial. Now, nosocomial is a general word for any infection acquired in the hospital. So, yes, ma'am. Walking pneumonia is usually viral. Yeah. But it can become bacterial as well. All right, you do not need to memorize this chart. But what we do want you to notice is the number one CAP is strep pneumo. Number one nosocomial, Pseudomonas. Now look at this one right here, E. coli. Where does E. coli live? In your butt. So, poor nursing care. Oh yeah, and look at this over here in the cap. Can we say oral sex, anyone? Yes. So pneumonia from chlamydia, chances are, yes. Very uncommon, but the pneumonic plague can also cause pneumonia. Uncommon now, but there's some people predicting that the plague will come back. So, yeah. Yeah. So, what carries the bubonic plague? What carries the bubonic plague? Rats, and not just rats, but what lives on the rats? Fleas. Make sure there are no rats near your house. All right. In patients who are immunocompromised, they have a little bit different bugs. You do need to remember this one for later, because we'll talk about this next semester first thing. So Pneumocystis carinii, also called PCP, is a protozoa that's very commonly causes pneumonia in patients with HIV and cancer or transplant. Mycobacterium tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is bad enough in normal people, but one of the things that's driving the reemergence of tuberculosis throughout the world is the HIV epidemic in Asia and in Africa. Oh, that's another thing. By the way, did you hear the world, you know, for years we were told it's not just homosexuals who get HIV, but it is also heterosexuals. Well, in Africa, it's mostly a heterosexual disease. And they were saying that it's going to happen in the rest of the world as well. But guess what? The World Health Organization just released new data and said there's pretty much no chance of a heterosexual epidemic in the rest of the world other than sub-Saharan Africa, like Zimbabwe and Zambia. The rest of the world, the people who get it, primarily injecting drug users, sex workers, whatever that means, and homosexual men. So, homosexual women, live it up. Sex workers is primarily sex slaves and prostitutes. So, anyway, just thought you might want to know that. And then these people tend to get the exotic things, funguses, respiratory viruses, protozoa, parasites, because their bodies just can't fight them off. They're things that ordinarily wouldn't cause anyone any problem, but because they're immunosuppressed, they get those diseases. All right, aspiration of oropharyngeal contents is a huge problem in the hospital. Here's all the things that has to happen in order to get an ordinary infection. So ordinarily, whatever you breathe in has to overcome the mucociliary escalator, the cough reflex, and your alveolar macrophages in order to cause a problem. So in small numbers, macrophages by themselves can usually kill off any invaders. In larger numbers, the inflammatory response usually kills off whatever it is. But if you have localized filling of acinus with exudate, we call that consolidation, and this is pneumonia. All right, pneumonia manifestations, usually preceded by an upper respiratory infection or a flu. So usually it doesn't just happen. It usually is secondary to another infection. Cough, it can be productive or unproductive. You know, some people say, well, if it's not a productive cough, it's not pneumonia. Well, no, you can have either way. Dyspnea and fever, malaise. What does malaise mean? Say again? I just feel bad. I just feel crappy. I just have no energy. That's malaise. Fatigue, chills, pleuritic pain. Patient will sometimes have inspiratory crackles, may have decreased breath sounds, increased fremitus, and a different percussion note. On a chest x-ray, they'll typically have infiltrates, which can be either patchy, lobar, or diffuse. Usually, pneumonia is confined to one lobe of the lung, but sometimes it'll spread to the other lobes. White blood cell counts. We'll have what we call a shift to the right or the left. We'll talk about those next week. If you get a sputum culture, you can culture it, you can Gram stain it. You can do a culture and sensitivity where you grow it and then you see what kills it. Treatment. Give the patient oxygen if their O2 sats are going down. Bronchodilate the patient as necessary. Make sure they are adequately hydrated and provide adequate hygiene. Chest therapy if needed. Antibiotics. This is what most of us skip straight to when we forget all this other stuff. Antibiotics as appropriate. This is an old slide apparently. Gadaflex, this drug right here is no longer on the market. Levofloxacin is probably one of the number one drugs of choice, along with ceftriaxone, which we'll learn about next semester, and azithromycin or clarithromycin. We'll talk about these drugs next semester. All right, pulmonary vascular disease. Pulmonary vascular disease, the number one we want to talk about is pulmonary embolism. Pulmonary embolisms come from DVTs. What is a DVT? Deep venous thrombosis. So it's a blood clot in a deep vein. And the most common location for DVTs are the lower leg. If a clot breaks off, it will float up into the inferior vena cava, through the atria, through the right ventricle, into the lung. So clots in leg veins break off and go to the lung and cause pulmonary embolism. Patient will have sudden dyspnea, like, bam, I'm having trouble breathing, all of a sudden I can't breathe. Not hoarseness, just dyspnea. Hypotension, low blood pressure, and shock. Here's the key thing for us. We must recognize patients who are at risk for DVTs. And then we try to prevent them. So, who's at risk for a DVT? Say again? Okay, someone who's on bed rest or decreased mobilization. Now, is that people in the hospital? Yes, almost everyone at the hospital is at risk for increased risk of DVT. The reason for that is because they're not walking around as much. Even if they can walk just fine, they spend most of their time in bed. With their legs crossed, what does that do? Stops the circulation, so that causes increased pooling. Surgeries, especially bone surgeries, increase the risk of blood clots. So what are we going to do for that patient who's at risk for clots? We're going to make sure we move them around. What else? Say again? We're going to make sure the legs are uncrossed. There's compression devices we can put on a patient, either a special type of hose, or we can what's called ICDs, intermittent compression devices. It's like a little Velcro thing you put on the patient's leg, and then it squeezes their legs and milks the blood back up. What else are we going to do for that patient? We can give them anticoagulants. Let's not use the word blood thinner. There's only one blood thinner, and that's water. Anticoagulants. So they're less likely to clot. So prevention is key. Now, once a patient does have a pulmonary embolism, we're going to put them on oxygen. We're going to give them anticoagulation. And we're going to possibly give them a thrombolytic to break the clot up. Very, very dangerous. People who get pulmonary embolisms, I think the number is like 50% of them die, even with treatment. So the key is to prevent them.
So if one breaks loose and goes up and they're already into dyspnea, what can you do?
What you do is you get them in bed so that you don't want them walking around increasing their respiratory demand. So you bed rest. Give them oxygen and anticoagulate them or break up the clot. That's the treatment. And hope they don't die. Pulmonary hypertension will again lead to corpulmonary colpulmonale, which will lead to right ventricular enlargement and eventually heart failure. We've covered that one to death. All right, cancers. This is, I think, the last thing we're going to talk about until we move to drugs. First, we have oral cancer. Oral cancer is almost always associated with tobacco use. Speaking of tobacco use, don't you think it's rather ironic that liberals love Native Americans but hate the number one Native American product, tobacco? I find that ironic. I mean, we should all be smoking the peace pipe, right? Different? Oh, that's worse, right, okay. Because there's no filter on that. Like tar?
Not the kind of chemical
that they put into. Like mint? Oh, did you hear about that? Mint. What's the number one ingredient or flavoring for cigarettes?
Menthol.
There was a bill before Congress where they are going to ban all flavorings except menthol. Guess who smokes the most menthol cigarettes out of any group in America? Black people. Is that a conspiracy or what? I'm telling you, you got to watch out for those Democrats. They are out to kill people. Don't worry, I hate the Republicans just as much as Democrats. Lung cancer. 13% of all U.S. cancer is lung cancer, but 25 to 30% of all deaths. What does that mean? Only 13% of all U.S. cancer is lung cancer, but about a quarter to a third of the cancer deaths. What does that mean? It means we're not very good at treating it. So that's another thing is, you really don't, there's no lumps to feel. You know, there's no sore that doesn't heal. There's no bowel movement change. And people, what's the number one sign of lung cancer? Shortness of breath and cough, but people already have had that for years from their smoking, so they ignore it. So as a result, we catch it late, and once we catch it late, we're not very good at treating it. So more likely to die from lung cancer, even though it's not that common in the overall scheme of cancer. Heavy smokers have 20 times the risk of non-smokers. Secondhand smoke causes about 1.3 times risk, which is the same as saying no additional risk. We'll talk about why in research. Types of lung cancer. We have non-small cell lung cancer, of which about 30% is squamous cell. And then 35 to 40% is adenocarcinoma. Then we have what we call large cell carcinoma, which is 10 to 15%, and small cell carcinoma, which is about 14%. I'm not going to ask you to know all of these things. What I want you to know is that it's difficult to treat. We catch it late. And as a result, more people die as a percentage than you would think from its percentage in total cancer. The other thing is that heavy smokers have 20 times the risk.